Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin, and today on the pod, I had the great pleasure of sitting down with Liz Winstead, who is the co-creator of The Daily Show and the founder of Lady Parts Justice, which is a group dedicated to... protecting women's reproductive rights. We had a great conversation. We talked about everything from the role that the media plays in political coverage to Lady Parts Justice and what we can do to protect women's reproductive rights.
In my entire career of responding to the world, responding to politics, I am an activist. I myself have had an abortion, and I got to do a lot of the stuff I did because I got to be able to exercise that choice. We never talk about reproductive rights. We never center it ever. And I was furious.
But before we get to the interview, I want to share some listener feedback as well as award the Hellion of the Week. First, let's do a little bit of listener feedback. Ree emailed us and she said, quote, I appreciated so much hearing Drexel say that he gets claustrophobic in large crowds when you were talking about the Women's March in LA this year. I have the same issue, and whenever I try and explain it to people, there's usually a lot of eye rolling as though it's an issue I've created just because I don't want to go somewhere. To be fair, that's usually true because so many places require pants, but in some cases, I get frustrated even with myself because it prevents me from participating in things even if I really want to. It made me feel so validated to hear that someone else, especially someone as visible as Drexel, has this same issue. I don't feel so terrible now about not being able to be physically present in the resistance at large. I need these reminders that it's okay to resist in small ways that are manageable for me, such as volunteering for clinic defense at a women's health center where I live. I think we can all appreciate the feeling you get when you realize that you're not alone in something, even if it's with someone you'll never know. Thank you again for all you do and best wishes. And I'm so glad Ree sent that email because it is definitely validating to hear that you're not alone. And there are plenty of reasons why a person might not be able to go to a march or do something that they want to do in the resistance. And every single piece that you can do helps, no matter what it is, as long as you feel comfortable and safe. That is the best thing you can do for the resistance because you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of anybody else. Okay, so now I want to award the Hellion of the Week. I want to put a quick content warning here. I am going to discuss child molestation and Larry Nassar's case. This week's Hellion is Judge Rosemarie Aquilina. She was the sentencing judge in the case of Larry Nassar. I think we all know Larry Nassar was convicted of molesting over 140 girls. He was the doctor for the national gymnastics team as well as the Olympic gymnastics team, and he was very trusted by these women. And really by these girls, some as young as 8 years old. During his sentencing, Judge Aquilina heard testimony from Nassar's victims and praised the women for breaking their silence. She also said that she had served in the military and that she would proudly serve with any of these women as her leader. She told Nassar to sit down and listen and then sentenced him to life in prison between 60 and 170 years. What I also found very powerful was that she read selected excerpts from the letter of that he wrote, I guess, to put his side in all of this during sentencing. And after she read parts of Nassar's letter, she just tossed the paper aside like it was trash. Because honestly, it was trash. He kept denying what he did and saying that he was manipulated by the AG and other people in the Justice Department and lawyers. So, you know, he just kept saying that it was medical and that he shouldn't be in this position. And so when she tossed that paper to the side like it was trash, it really felt she was so able to stand up for these survivors. Judge Aquilina is getting a lot of of shit in the media. A lot of people are saying that she's too harsh, that she shouldn't have let all of these women speak. And I have never once heard a man, a male judge, being told that he is too harsh during sentencing. And the fact that people are trying to make this about her gender, about the fact that she's a woman, and not about justice, and not about this monster, Larry Nassar, and what he did, really says a lot about rape culture and how it permeates through our society to the depths that we don't even understand. These women were hurt by this man when they were girls. And instead of focusing on that, a lot of these media outlets can focus on is if Judge Aquilina is being too harsh. So I think it's just a really disgusting example of how we shape the narrative in this country around women and sexual assault and believing women, even in the midst of this Me Too movement, in the midst of talking about believing women. There's still this pushback in the form of calling Judge Aquilina too harsh. Liz Winstead is the co-creator of The Daily Show and served as the head writer on the show. She founded Lady Parts Justice, a group dedicated to protecting women's reproductive rights. We are so lucky to have her on the show today. So welcome, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited because you're in studio as well.
Yeah.
I love it.
I have found that LA is the land of people having really cool outdoor spaces yeah. to have their podcasts. Yeah. And this is like the third one I've been on where it's like, it totally feels like we're in some kind of feminist sleeper cell bunker, which I love.
Yeah. I even painted the windows or the walls pink.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
We are in the inner uterine sanctum.
I believe that I'm going to put that on the door to my office. Inner uterine sanctum. Keep out.
Keep out.
It's secret.
Yeah. It's a secret.
Don't tell Devin Nunes.
Secret society of people who talk about their secret societies. All over the place.
Like, we're really bad at it. So I want to start by asking you, when you created The Daily Show in 1986.
96.
Yes.
Yes.
What was the original intent? Because it's become this huge cultural touchstone.
Right.
Was that the original intent?
I mean, if I were to sit here and go, you know, my intent was to be a huge cultural touchstone, you should punch me.
That's fair.
Right. So the intent was, I had been doing comedy. I had been watching sort of a little bit where cable news was in its infancy.
Right.
And what was happening around media was there was like 5,000 of these like news magazine shows that like Dateline. And there was actually 17 different shows that were designed to just like, your mattress, what you don't know might scare you.
Right.
Right. And then there was only CNN at that point, and they were doing like 24/7, like the trial of the century of the week.
Right.
It was like OJ and the baby shaking nanny. And so they had abdicated any journalistic responsibility at all. So the landscape and the idea for me was there is no information on television that you know about the world that you're living in. And so when we started it out, we sort of modeled the show after making fun of local news, that sort of if it bleeds, it leads, and then how crappy cable was. So it was as much about how non-substantive our media was as it was about the newsmakers themselves. Then when we launched, literally 3 weeks after we launched, MSNBC launched, and 3 months after we launched, Fox News launched.
Oh.
So all of a sudden, then we had an onslaught of like crappity crap media that proved our point over and over again that more media just meant more idiots and more bullshit. And so we followed the lead of how the media was not doing its job And I think that was the original intent was to not reinvent the wheel, but just pay attention to how the wheel is actually being reinvented and then satirize that.
Right. So almost like mocking media itself.
Yeah, it's kind of like we used to say we were the watchdogs of the watchdogs.
Right.
Because that was a role that nobody had done before. And that's how it started. You know, it was like we would always ask ourselves, if the sound is turned down, could you tell this was not a news show? And we always wanted the answer to be no. I could not tell any difference.
Right. So now it's really, like you said, it's become more about mocking the newsmakers themselves.
Yeah.
In addition to mocking the format. How does humor, and particularly political humor, shape the political narrative?
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if it shapes the political narrative, because I think what's interesting is how people perceive what a show like The Daily Show can do for them. So it's fascinating to me how people will go on that show, and under the sort of any press is good press, it's like, you realize you're being made fun of, right?
Right.
And they don't realize it. Or people who see it to go on as a guest, to sit in the chair in the studio, to realize you can sell your book, you can make your point, because people have gathered to watch The Daily Show, not only to get some information, but to watch, to have a catharsis about the information they've taken in all day. So you have two sets of people, people willing to listen and learn and get their information through comedy, and people who have gotten their information from other places and need a catharsis because it feels awful. And I think that a really smart political satirist is somebody you can trust if they, when they choose their stories, pick hypocrisy no matter where it comes from. And that's the key.
Right. I've heard before that political humor only lands because it's pointing out the ridiculousness that already exists.
I mean, yeah, it's very hard to explain things.
Right.
But in a news format, you're able to do so. You know, that's why I think one of the things that made The Daily Show and makes The Daily Show so unique is, and even John Oliver and Sam B also, you have time to lay out an issue and you do now have that time to explain it. Unlike a stand-up or unlike a late-night monologue joke, these shows give you an opportunity to lay some stuff out and then bat it all down with humor.
More than just a punchline.
Yeah.
You get to set up the whole joke and then deliver the
punchline. That's right. So you were setting up the joke, you can also set up the narrative of what's happening.
Right.
So, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'm always saying to people, oh my God, you don't know who Alex Jones is? Just Google John Oliver Alex Jones and you can learn about like what this crazy conspiracy person is all about.
Right.
And, you know, and so many issues we know when somebody takes a single topic and breaks it down, it's pretty cool.
Yes, it is. Switching gears, I want to talk about Lady Parts Justice.
Yes.
Which you founded in 2015.
Yes.
So was there a specific event in 2015 or thing that happened that prompted you to start it? Or was it a more general project, something you'd been wanting to do?
Well, I think it was, I want to say, we sort of soft launched it in 2012. And what happened for me was I left The Daily Show and then I did some independent projects. And then I launched Air America Radio. And I had a radio show with Rachel Maddow and Chuck D for 2 years there. And when I left there, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. And somebody said, do you want to write a book? And I was like, sure. And then I had like fraud syndrome because heaven forbid you just are a woman who decides my stories are interesting.
Right. Yeah, the imposter syndrome really kicks into high gear there.
I mean, so I had 18 months to write the book. At 12 months, I had not started it. So I was like, I have to figure out a way to go and be at peace and write a book. So I'm from Minnesota originally. So I packed up my two dogs and I rented a van and I drove from Brooklyn to Minnesota in the winter of 2011. And that was like a month. It was like November, a month after the election where the Tea Party sweep happened in Congress. So I'm there writing my book. Now I'm even more distracted because there's a swearing in of this horrible Congress. And on day one of that Congress, there was a congressman from Indiana named Mike Pence. You might have heard of him. He, H.R. 1, House of Representatives Bill 1, he stood on the floor and said, we need to defund the national parks, public media, and Planned Parenthood. And I was like, wait, are they performing abortions on Car Talk in Yosemite? Like, that is, I'm not sure I'm for that. I'm very pro-choice, but maybe not. Turns out they weren't.
Right.
And then turns out back then, sane people were in Congress still and said, we can't defund those things. And so that bill failed. But what happened was, unbeknownst to, this typical of Democrats, not paying attention or having their eye on the ball, crazy anti-choice extremists were creating model legislations for the states. And within 3 months, the same piece of model legislation dropped in 27 state legislatures and passed, shutting down clinics instantly, creating all of these unreasonable regulations that had nothing to do with health at all, just had to do with obstacles to abortion. And I was writing my book and I was like, and watching this happen. And I was like, you want to know what? In my entire career of responding to the world, responding to politics, I am an activist. I myself have had an abortion and I got to do a lot of the stuff I did because I got to be able to exercise that choice. We never talk about reproductive rights. We never center it ever. And I was furious. And I was like, when people say, how can we keep finding ourselves in this position? It's because the issue is never centered. It's not a multi-gendered issue. It's like, hey, you with the uteruses, I guess you better fight on this, huh? And it's like, I am half the population. Why aren't you looking at this as a human rights issue? So I was like, I got to do something. I have to do something. And so I finished my book and I had to get back to Brooklyn with my dogs and the van. This is a long story. You asked it. But so I called up Planned Parenthood and I called up some independent clinics and I said, I got to drive back to Brooklyn with my dogs. What if I came and did some benefits and fundraisers? And they were like, who are you? And I'm like, no, it's a really good idea. I know I sound crazy. So I did these fundraisers on my way back to Brooklyn. And some of them were like these like rich people chicken dinner things. And I was like, well, where's the staff? And they're like, oh, the staff, you know, doesn't come to these things. And I was like, but I want to meet the staff who does the work. So I started visiting these clinics. And every clinic I went to, someone who worked there, either it was the doctor or the administrator or the receptionist would say, thank you for coming. You know, no one ever comes to visit us. Like we never, people just leave and we feel abandoned. And every day we come to work and these protesters are outside and they follow us home and there's nobody here to counterbalance that narrative. And I just thought, I can be that person, I think. So I had a potluck chili with like 30 comics and writers and producers and at my apartment. And I said, I just had this experience. I think that we need to raise the stakes and really tell this narrative because anything you know about the rights that happened, the erosion of reproductive rights, is from feminist press and from activists. It's not on the news. And then I kind of want to do like a USO tour for these folks and go and do comedy shows and then have a talk back with the activists in that town and the people who run the clinics and here have my comedy audience hear what these people need and then sign up right there at the show to grow their base.
Right.
And so that's what we do. And it's been fascinating because that part has just grown exponentially because then you find out that if you're a clinic that provides abortion, sometimes you can't get you can't pay a contractor to fix your roof or get a plumber because they find out you perform abortion, they will be followed home. People will picket their establishments, follow their kids home. Yeah. And so finding people so somebody turned to me and said, wait, if my lawn care service gets paid and takes them out as a client, that's activism? I'm like, yeah, that's activism. So it's been really eye-opening. And so That's what we're doing. We help them come up with like good comedy ideas to protest at their state legislatures, to help do really fun fundraisers to get pro-choice off and if we can women elected.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of some of your tours and they look amazing.
It's really fun.
It looks really fun.
It's really fun. It's really rewarding. And it's like, you just learn that by, you can take the skill that you have and translate that into changing the landscape of people's lives. Right. And it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So you are holding a telethon.
We are.
For Lady Parts Justice.
Yes.
And it's on February 1st.
February 1st, live streaming at Lady Parts Justice or on our YouTube channel if you have a Roku or on my Facebook page, Liz Winstead Facebook page. So it's many places to stream it. Yeah. Because this shit ain't free.
Right. Right. Hey, I get it.
So we have to raise money so that we can, you know, help out these clinics and then also help change the landscape in 2018 so we can have candidates who are actually going to be proactive and who are going to vote against this crappy legislation and get rid of some of these people who are currently the vaginal crossing guards of our of our elected officials. Ain't nobody got time for it. So yeah, so it's a straight up telethon. It's going to be so much fun. It's Sarah Silverman and I and Rachel Bloom are hosting it for 2 hours. Mark Hamill is going to be on screen the whole time making crafts. Unbelievable.
I cannot tell you how amazing that is.
I know. It's going to be incredible. And then we have like all kinds of really great phone bankers. We have Frangela. We have Baron Vaughn. We have Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher. We have Amy Brenneman. We have Guy Branum, we have Andy Richter, Brian Unger, Jenny Yang, I don't want to forget anybody. But it's a whole cavalcade of people, and there's going to be comedy and sketches. We have a patriarchy pinata that you can whack at.
Yes.
there's going to be singing. There's going to be some special guests. So, yeah, it's live from the Feminist Sleeper Cell, and we've created a secret bunker. And so it's pretty cool because we only have 50 seats. So we have tickets on sale for the first 50 people who buy the tickets. And then and if you didn't get them, then you can just live stream it at home. But we wanted to have a small, intimate environment that felt really special. And then the money will go to promoting that tour and helping us get out. We're going to stay out on the road all summer, getting people to get out the vote, helping candidates running in races that are toss-ups, so that we can flip some districts in the Congress, so we can flip some state legislatures and some governor's races.
Yeah, we say on the show a lot that local politics is sexy.
And that's our whole
so
thing.
So much happens at the local level.
Yep.
And like Mike Pence is the fucking worst.
Yes.
But he's only one part of the problem.
That's exactly right. And for us, especially being people who focus on reproductive rights and abortion access, if your issue is prisons, voting, guns, repro, police violence, that shit's all out of your state legislature.
It's so local. And it's a lot easier to get involved than people think because it's all local.
That's right. And so what we love about it so much is there's so many cool badasses who are out there doing the work. But oftentimes when you're going to some of these communities, there's this core of people who are doing everything. They're the ones fighting fracking. They're trying to unionize. They're trying to, you know, they're working with Black Lives Matter. And it's like, we just need more troops, you know? And I was like, well, I can bring an audience. You can tell them the work you do. And it works out perfect because then they don't view you as somebody telling them what to do because they already know what they're doing. And you can grow those bases. And it feels pretty cool. You know, we did a show in Birmingham. We got a whole bunch of people out to vote or out to join with the Birmingham activists who are trying to get this Black progressive mayor elected. And they did. You know, so when you do stuff like that, you're like, this is really great. It's also super cool to like go to places where and see what the climate is like and to see people working so hard against, you know, we have tons of friends in Alabama. And when Doug Jones came in, those activists were like, he could win. And the Democratic Party's not looking at it and no one's looking at it, but he could win. And it was like, really? And they're like, yeah, please help us. He could totally win if people would just help us. And it was a crazy uphill battle, but it took like the party hacks at the DNC forever to figure that out and even try to fight. And I think that happens a lot.
Yeah.
So Yeah. So you can make a difference. But right. Yeah. And I love the fact that, you know, when you look at Virginia, that makes a difference. When you're two votes shy of, you know, taking over the state ledge. And it's like, oh, if two more people would have voted, it would have been a democratically run legislature. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Showing up is so important.
Show up. And getting people registered to vote throughout the summer. And then we're doing another big push in the fall called the Golden Probes, which is literally like the Golden Globes. It's an award show. It is sexism's most glamorous night. And we literally have an award show with like all your favorite actors and celebrities. And the clips are literal sound bites from state and local politicians. So if you have 10 categories and 5 nominees, all of a sudden that's 50 pieces of information that are being served to you in a way that's funny and smart. Right. And then you realize, holy shit, I don't know my state legislators. At least I've gotten you to register. Now you know. And then we also have a tool on our website where, you know, we're going to be comedy, of course, is pointing out the worst because that's sure. kind of how it goes. So when you're on our website, you can click on who are these good candidates? What do they stand for in each of your states? So you can just click on your state and you'll see a slate of people, of progressive candidates, and see what they stand for. And so you can make informed choices as well. So we're not just shitting all over everybody and walking away. We're giving you some information.
Yeah. Yeah, it is very interesting because when you call your, you know, state assembly, state legislatures, they don't get very many calls.
Right.
So when you have something to say, they actually listen to you.
That's right. And lobby days, when you can go up and talk to them.
Yeah.
And you go up with a group and, you know, storytelling is incredible. And putting a face on the issue you believe in is really incredible to tell. And to be able to go there so they can't make these blanket statements about, you know, when they like disgustingly called, you know, undocumented people illegals and shit. Yeah. It's like, shut your face. And why don't you talk to some dreamers? Why don't you just talk to some people who are here? There's, you're talking about human beings. And if we don't show up and say, I am the human being that you're reducing, they're going to be allowed to do it. And it comes farther and farther and farther from the humanity of who we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it can sometimes feel so abstract.
Yes.
In politics.
Yes.
Especially when you have these like deals going on and like I'm holding Chip hostage yes. for this. You know, and it you don't realize that it's 9 million children.
That's right.
When you're doing that.
That's exactly right.
And so
right.
showing up and putting your face on it is like, I'm one of these people. Listen to me.
Well, and it's also too, like there's so much happening right now that all these things that profoundly affect our lives forever are just happening, are being slid under our nose. You know, we all realize that these federal and circuit judgeships are happening, but it's not getting any press. Right. And it's like putting people in permanent positions who are creepy, unqualified, unconstitutionalist fucking dreck bags. I mean, that is completely problematic. All of these anti-choice laws, you know, what's happening, you know, net neutrality, like you had to be woken up to these certain things that are not necessarily making front page, literally because Trump is walking around just pouring gasoline on the world and then farting out his McDonald's and lighting it on fire. And so how do you deal with, you know, how do you deal with the locusts if you can't get past the wall of fire? And I think that's right. What's happening is keep that fire burning so you don't see that, you know,
like what's actually going on.
Yeah, all the other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think right now is most imperiled? Like what part of women's reproductive rights is most imperiled in this moment?
I think what's happening at this moment right now is that the access to affordable care, for sure. 90% of the counties in the United States are without a clinic that provides abortion. So it really profoundly affects poor people and people of color. And so I think that there, and then you combine that with there's lack of education around it. There's so much misinformation around what abortion actually is, what an abortion pill is versus what Plan B is. So the lack of science and the lack of truth that is being used to shape legislation around reproductive care is really profound. And when so many schools are not having sex education in their schools anymore, and when you can opt in or out if a Planned Parenthood comes in to talk about sex and birth control, you're creating a society full of ill-informed people. And it goes back to, you know, as we watch consent right now being front and center of our conversations, and people are removing their kids from birth control and sex ed classes that talk about consent. Right.
Kind of a circular issue.
Yes. And so all of it kind of ties together, right? And so it is the lack of access. Clinics are closing. People are creating laws that are, it's interesting because I don't even think Roe v. Wade needs to be overturned, because there's so many ways around it legislatively that people are creating clinics to not stay open. Right. One example is there's something called admitting privileges that physicians are often required to have. And on its face, it sounds like, oh, why wouldn't a doctor have to have admitting privileges at a hospital to provide abortion? That seems fine. And then you go, let me explain that to you. If anything happened to you, if you had an abortion, which it's safer than having your wisdom teeth pulled, you could just go to a hospital.
Right.
But B, in order to get admitting privileges at a hospital, you have to prove that you have a caseload. And because abortion's so safe, the provider providing abortion can't show they have a caseload, so the hospital won't grant them admitting privileges. And if they don't have the admitting privileges, then the clinic closes down.
Right.
So creating a false rule, and then you can't fulfill it because there's no need for it, is like one way. They call them trap laws. That's one of the traps that they set up.
Yeah.
So that kind of insidious shit is crazy. And people just not talking about it. People not centering it. I always say to people, if you've had an abortion and you can talk about it, it's really helpful because you are putting a face on it. You're also helping the people who have had one who can't talk about it to know that they shouldn't have shame or stigma around it. So I think the conversation, normalizing it, talking about it, and putting it in its proper place, which is a medical service that a woman or a person might need to have in their reproductive lifetime.
Right. So what can our listeners do to get involved with Lady Parts Justice?
Oh, that's fun. So what you can do is you can go sign up on our website. And what we like to do is people have, if they want or not, they create these, you can create a loose organization to do stuff under our umbrella, or you don't have to at all. But every month we create an activity that you can recreate with your friends, 2, 3, 5 people. So for example, 4 times a year, we do this concentrated postcard writing campaign where we write postcards to every clinic around the country because they get hate mail. And when you send them a note saying, thank you for being in our community, we really appreciate you, it means the world to them. It is such a small gesture, but they really like it. And it has to be a postcard, because if they get unexpected mail, they don't know what's in it. And that's just another terrifying thing. Or like we watched Dirty Dancing last year, and then we called our legislators to ask them not to defund Planned Parenthood. And then we watched Dirty Dancing, and then we had a talk back afterwards about class and race and gender and abortion. And so we create these things where you can get together with your friends, participate, watching parties for the Golden Probes. We will facilitate, if there's people who say, you know what, we've been consistently getting together with our friends, even if it's like 6 people, we'd love to get together with our local clinic and see if we can be champions for them, bring them cupcakes, escort at a clinic or whatever, we can facilitate that conversation. So if you sign up with us, we can give you tasks. And what I like is, if you have an hour, if you have a day, if you have a week, a month, we can task you with what you feel comfortable and have time doing, and have it be really fulfilling.
Yeah, that sounds actually really fun.
Yeah, it actually is really fun. And like, it's amazing. And you know, it's amazing what you can do with your friends if you just add a little bit of a component of let's make somebody else happy within our time that we have together.
Right. All right. I have 2 more questions.
Yes.
One is, while you're at the telethon, yes. can you tell Rachel Bloom that I love her and I think she's amazing for
me? I can.
Yes. Just say, Devin says you're great and I'm not creepy, I promise, but I love her.
Yes.
And then the second one. On. And so my last question is, at the end of every show, Sarah and I like to do what we call gratitude checks.
Oh, great.
Because we live in pretty dark times.
Yes.
And so we like to talk about things that we're grateful for. And it can, you know, we talk about political pieces. We talk about our pets. I talk about Netflix a lot. Just something that makes you happy in these dark political times.
I think something that makes me happy in these dark political times is the network of people and family that I have who are loving and smart and funny and who we help each other navigate through it. We help each other figure out what our self-care looks like, and we help each other understand that it's not all in or all out. Resistance is this thing that is, if you want it to last, you have to manage it in a way that makes sense. And so for me, having people yank me back out, joy. I love Scrabble. Scrabble's a really good thing to like dive into. And I think just knowing that and watching people see the world that's larger than themselves and doing something about it. For the first time in my lifetime, I've seen people talking about things that I've begged them to care about. Right. Midterm elections, brown people.
Yeah.
And centering other voices. So I feel thankful that sadly through crisis, we were united, but I feel like that united is becoming a movement rather than a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. So thank you so much, Liz.
Thanks for coming.
This was so fun.
It was super fun. I loved it.
So you can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Winstead.
That's right. I'm with two Z's.
Two Z's. And you can follow Lady Parts Justice at Lady P Justice.
That's right.
And tune into the telethon.
That's right. It's called The Life is a Living Nightmare, a telethon to fix it.
Right, right. and that's on February 1st at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Yep.
And that will be on Liz's Facebook and the Lady Parts Justice website.
That's right.
All right.
It's going to be fun.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, Hellions, that is it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to follow Liz on Twitter. You can also follow me at Devin Handy. Also, friendly reminder, if you follow Hellbent on Instagram at HellbentPod, you can see stories where Sarah and I give you real-time updates on what we think about the news. You can also find us on Twitter at HellbentPod. Also, please subscribe to us on iTunes and rate us. It is the rules of feminism, so just do it. Anyway, thank you again for listening, and I will see you back here on Monday.